So this is book Little W, which begins on August 9th, 1979, and goes through to January of 1980. The beginning is a continuation of the work trying to have the thymidine kinase gene driving G-gamma in order to understand the control of the gene, or perhaps it was the other way around. Anyway, the idea being to learn the features of control of the mammalian genes, G-gamma, the mammalian gene G-gamma. So the first page is minis of new candidates, and this continues for several pages. End labeling of a 6.9 kilobase G-gamma fragment to act as a probe on page 3, January, August 10th, Friday, and analysing the results on Monday, August 13th, preceding things. The TK gene is next to G gamma. Two particular clones, the one called 353 and the other called 251. And mapping the sites on the 6.9 gamma piece. And further work of that type on Tuesday, August 14th, page 13. And Jerry Slatham's data being looked at on page 15, and what we might expect in the following experiment. And so here again on Tuesday, August 14th, and page 17, working with these two TKG gamma, G gamma, TKG gamma clones, 251 and 353. Continuing on several pages with a comment on the data analysis of a gel on page 21. Best is to sequence to the right from the left end of the 2990B. Quite nice gels on the left, but no labels, so it's questionable if I run them. Here is some more discussion of what's going on page 23, both alphas, globin genes that is, are likely to be obtained in the screen for alphas, and it would be useful to have both gammas and delta and beta on single plasmids. That was a foresight of something that turned out to be really quite interesting later on when we got the G-gamma and A-gamma genes on single fragments. Thinking about it being useful, which later proved to be the case. On page 25, I'm talking about Friday, August 17th through Sunday, August 19th, characterizing two PBR322 clones which we received from Tom Maniatis, who as usual was very generous with everything, so we got from him a beta and a delta clones processed as previously on page 25. Good separation but poor yields. Continuing with the characterization of earlier clones on the following pages. On page 29, for example, the second gradients are rather diffuse, etc., etc. The yield here, one case was 524 micrograms and the other was 435. And these were sent to Raju Kuchilapati for his assembly into the test vehicles that we were going to use. I will no doubt find that paper in due course, because we did publish continuing on page 31, re-cloning the TK of with G gamma and A gamma and G gamma plus A gamma reclone on page 31. So this work is continuing with these two plasmids. Minis on the Maniatis as H alpha G2. It doesn't say specifically what that is, but it was probably a probe or clone obtained from Tom Maniatis. Continuing in the same vein over the next few pages. On Thursday, August 30th, back from Princeton, must have had given a seminar there. Minis from Maniatis as alpha clone were processed. And the TK beta plasmid now being considered on page 49, referring back to page 9. Where there were various possibilities of being considered for beta and TK, talking about how it might be made. Beta TK can be made as a dimer. I'm going back to page 9 briefly. And one unstable in one orientation, etc. And so this is a continuation of the ideas started on page 9 and now on page 40. I've tried to digest in a simple experiment, but conclusion overshot badly. Do a proper titration. Titrating of the HB 1S for a single cut on the following page, to get a single cut rather than multiple cuts. Continuing on Tuesday, September 4th, page 53, still looking to get that, with the conclusion almost ideal, a trace high digestion, preparation as usual, an excellent product. So the single cut of that plasmid was made all right. Considering making a probe for beta globin, a screen for beta colonies using delta PST fragment, since beta overlaps PBR 322, etc. Technical problem. Ligation now of the TK to the beta globin piece on page 57. Ligation excellent, etc. And remaking, starting again, the single cut on PBR 322 TK on September 6th. Now trying to get the sequence between delta and beta, a test where the delta and beta are co-transcribed. it would be useful to have a probe from between them. That's rather to test whether delta and beta are co-transcribed. It would be useful to have a probe from between them. A suitable probe is, and there is a map of what might be a suitable probe. And comment that N has something from which that could be made. So, bam cutting, PBR 322. Imagine having a whole page for that. BAMR 1 cutter, PBR 322, still going on page 67. Something that will be very routine, but still worth having a page in the notebook at that time. Usual business of ligations, the Stockmeyer concentrations, which were always injured, somewhat unnecessary probably, on page 69. With some doubtfulness about whether it was correct or not. But the ligation, one ligation looked excellent and one looked reasonable. Tuesday, September 11th. You can make the same set of clones for the fetal genes, as commented on page 70, in getting out the transformation to get a 950 base pair beta IVS fragment and 700 base pair delta beta between delta and beta fragment that had been talked of earlier. This type of work continuing over the next several pages. IVS tests and ligations on page 77, Saturday, September 15th. Conclusion, good preparations. So everything was proceeding in regular sequence, if somewhat slowly. And a probe now for the G gamma plus A gamma, TK, PBR 322, being considered on September 17th, page 81. Need to have the 0.58 kilobase pair R1 piece on the 3' end of A gamma as a probe for the complete G gamma plus A gamma subclone. And a number of probes up for test now on page 83. This was on September 17th and October 24th, quite a gap on the next week, back from a vacation, a meeting in Paris, and with a 182RG, that's the airplane I had, an airplane of that type that I had to Spain and back from London, etc. So good vacation flying. Guy Fawkes Day commented on November 5th, H alpha gamma, H alpha G2, and so on. Poor amplifications that day. The characterization of the different pieces obtained. talking about stringency of hybridization on page 97 to decrease non-specific cross-reaction, etc., need to watch to greater stringency. And repeating genomic southerns on page 99. A previous example has been on page 92. No result shown immediately on the Friday experiment, November 23rd. Photographs of the stain gel on page 102. And there we come to the autoradiograph results on page 104, Sunday, November 25th, where the southern blots are shown. The conclusion being that one doesn't cut well due to methylated cytosine. But they're not bad southern blots, nonetheless. One with the 2.9 probe and one with the cDNA probe. Results are very similar. So a new clone, 164.6 being checked on. Jerry Slightham has tested that clone and concluded that it has the G gamma and the H and the A gamma gene on one piece, which in the end was a very useful piece of DNA to have, and we learned a lot from it. Many tests on 165.24 and 164.6 and 51.1, etc., on page 111 with the results on the left hand side. Very satisfying gel. 1% agarose, Hellings times 4, 3.8 volts per centimeter, etc. It's a good gel. And the interpretation of the results on page 113. Considering using a different enzyme instead of HAHA 1, Sunday, December 2nd, and the execution of that on the following page, with again a rather beautiful gel and quite good radioactive blood, and with the conclusion that TAC 1 worked fine. But either too little or too short R1 fragments, with, that was TAC1 and TAC1 plus equal R1. And now a summary of the differences between the various clones with a rather formal diagram on Sunday, December 30th, and with two other comments. The paper was written, which we'll have a look at in due course. This is Sunday, December 30th, and I passed the commercial pilot exam, so I'm now just qualified as a commercial pilot. That's not airline transport, but commercial, meaning at least you can fly for hire. Not that I ever wanted to, but it's a marker of one's progress. So here is a summary of the difference between the adult alpha globin clone and 30.5, and with various thoughts on it. Some work on cloning or preparing cDNA from mouse globin on December 31st, page 125, and a protocol on the opposite page for making cDNA. Just technical things. 30.5 over 700 repeat on the following page. I will eventually remember what 30.5 is, just at the moment I don't remember what it was, but it was a number that was, I'm still familiar with. A different strategy being thought of for getting specific hybridizations. Al Kinneberg suggested using kinase for end labeling and S1 endonuclease to see protection. Using this idea, the following sites would look good as a possible way. So 30.5 being tested further on Friday, January 4th. With in this case, a 7.5% acrylamide gel. The gels are really quite long gels. Here's an image of one on page 134. Mm-hmm. The gel was more than 20 centimeters long. 7.5% acrylamide with half just borate EDTA gel and 25% glycerol, and the conclusion that the digests are perfect of BSTE2, HINF1, etc. on page 135. Carfin desinyl phosphatase being prepared or used on page 135 to get rid of any end label, any phosphates, to enable end labeling of DNA. Another possible labeling scheme being talked about on page 140, and end labeling going on, 32p end labeling on Monday, January 7th, with an autoradiograph showing very heavy labeling. To see there how many counts were used. Yeah, about 250 microcuries of gamma ATP. That's 3,000 microcuries per millimole. It's enough to label 10 micrograms, so quite a hefty amount of gamma labeled ATP used in this experiment. and continuing. Now we get to some sequences with the complete sequence of 30.5 on page 149. And I'll have to look up a little bit more to find out what that is. So I'll pause for a minute. So this book ends rather nicely with the complete sequence, or almost complete, it says complete sequence, of the clone 30.5, which turned out to be a pseudogene, a mouse alpha globin related pseudogene, lacking intervening sequences, as we published Elio Vannin and Greg Goldberg and Phil Tucker, and I published later in July of 1980. So this was a finding that we had spent rather a lot of time on something that was interesting, but not quite what we had wanted to get, but still had a bearing on the way evolution works. This is because it was a copy, a cDNA copy, presumably, from an RNA made in during evolution, because it liked intervening sequences. It couldn't code for a functional globin polypeptide because of frame shifts, and commenting on the widespread occurrence of globin pseudogenes in other species suggests that they are not dead genes, but may be important in controlling globin expression. That did not turn out to be true, but they're interesting nonetheless. And that was the end of book W.